Today we are talking to Sophie Echevarria. She has written three books. They are called When in Doubt, Step on the Gas, Look Both Ways When You're Going to Break the Law, and her last one, which isn't published yet but is soon to be out, The McCarty Canyon Wild Bunch. She was born as Sophie Burden, and she was raised on the Remuda Ranch, an historic dude ranch established by her family outside of Wickenburg, Arizona. Her young, busy parents gave her free rein, and that resulted in a wild, unconventional childhood. She married Dom Echevarria, a Basque, who proved passionate, loving, and explosive. Their life together took them to the high Andes of Peru, Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming, where they ran one of the largest ranching operations in the West. Three of their eight children died of cystic fibrosis. Her story is alternately funny and tragic. This is a remarkable memoir, all three of her books. And I want to just take a quote from Tim Sandlin. He's a best-selling author and screenwriter. And he says about Sophie, "I knew Sophie Echevarria was high energy, curious, creative, and a hoot. Imagine lightning and pigtails. But until I read When in Doubt, Step on the Gas, I didn't know what a great writer she is. This book is honest, hilarious, sad, and delightful. I would advise you to buy two copies because you'll be forcing one on your friends and loved ones." And that was the first review she got with her first book, When in Doubt, Step on the Gas. Welcome, Sophie.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to have you here. This is such an exciting journey. When did you publish the first book, When in Doubt, Step on the Gas?
Oh, my gosh. I can't remember. A couple of years ago. And it's been very well received, to my amazement and delight. Mm-hmm. I never tried to sell it. I self-published it. And people just keep asking for it. So I thought, oh, I'm going to write another. And so that's what I'm doing.
And so the last one, when's the McCarty Canyon Wild Bunch? When is that going to be out?
I don't know. That one, the Wild Bunch, probably be a year because I only am about a quarter of the way into it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, while the second one, when Look Both Ways When You're Going to Break the Law, should be out maybe in October, certainly in December or November, pretty soon.
Tell me where each of those titles come from.
My husband, a real wild man, used to say, "When in doubt, step on the gas," and then he did. And he also used to say, "When you're going to break the law," which he frequently did, "look both ways first." In fact, the title is "Look Both Ways First When You're Going to Break the Law." He was scrupulously honest in his business dealings and was well-liked and respected for that, but he was just terrible about driving. He had no interest at all in stupid laws.
So, oh, my.
Yeah, so that's the title of the second book. The third book is The McCarty Canyon Wild Bunch, because after he was killed in 1970, leaving me with the seven children, one had died, we went kind of wild. We really did go quite wild. And the name of our ranch is McCarty Canyon Ranch. So we're the McCarty Canyon Wild Bunch.
Where is the McCarty Canyon Ranch?
It is in south central Wyoming in Carbon County. It's an old historic ranch. Everybody knows McCarty Canyon. It's a beautiful place.
Oh, okay.
And that's just one of the six. After he died, I had to sell three to save the other three. And thank God I sold the right ones, because the other three have provided us with a really fortunate life ever since. Thank God. So, but the McCarty Canyon Ranch is the only one with any buildings on it. You know, Wyoming. That's the way our ranches are, just wide open and nothing for, as far as you can see. But McCarty Canyon is in the foothills with aspens and pines and a wonderful old historic, over 100-year-old ratty log cabin. And that's where we spent our summers for many years. We bought it in 1967. And have spent summers there until recently, ever since, and very wild times.
Your three books each have specific themes, correct? Or they're specific
all
times
the same,
of your life?
No, they're all the same theme.
Okay.
I was asked to write down the wild stories before we lost them.
Right.
But rather than just write one wild story after another, I tried to have a theme mm-hmm. that pulled you on, and the theme, hopefully not sounding preachy or lectury or any of that, is how to survive no matter what, to keep smiling no matter how happy you are.
Well,
and so that is the theme, because we really did come through a lot of very difficult stuff, and I would like to give the gifts we learned from that to others if they're faintly interested.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that leads me to asking you about the tragedy, I think, about your three children who died of cystic fibrosis. And
yes, that's part of it. I have no idea why we should have three children with CF. I mean, on a spiritual level, it's a genetic disease. Mm-hmm. Both parents have to carry a recessive gene, and we did. And at that time, when we were having children, I was an extremely good Catholic, disgustingly good Catholic. Thank God for that, because Catholic birth control doesn't work. And so I wouldn't send any of those eight kids back. We just kept having them in spite of cystic fibrosis. And our experiences because of that disease were traumatic and tragic and really extraordinarily marvelous in many ways. Mm-hmm. We worked for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation for 20 years as volunteers. We weren't employed. Did many wonderful things, raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and had a lot of fun doing that. We participated in cystic fibrosis research, which was fascinating and very gratifying for me, because when you have a horrible thing going on with your children, you want to do something, and the something we could do was raise money for research and participate in research. So that's what we did. What else would you like to know? What can I tell you?
Well, I want you to read out of one of your books. I think the McCarty Canyon Wild Bunch, because that's about your kids, and it's about your family life, isn't it?
Yes.
With your children.
Yes.
It's after your husband died.
Nearly as dark as the other two books, because mostly we were just the Wild Bunch. There is a dark part when my son Joseph died, which probably will be the end of the book. Though maybe not. I never know where my books are going to go. They just go. But anyway, yes, we were having our wonderful wild time. Many funny things happened, and Emmy asked me to read a thing she thought was pretty funny. So I hope you think it's funny, too. Okay. My son David was going to the Colorado Mountain College at Glenwood Springs, Colorado. And once when I was visiting, he invited me to a big party his classmates were having. And honored, I accepted. First, there was a dinner in Carbondale, which they call Carbondole. And there I sat with about 30 college kids, all happily paired up with dates. I felt so alone. Over at a table near the window sat a handsome and distinguished-looking gentleman with white hair and beard. He looked lonely, too, so I went over and asked him if he would please be my date. What an auspicious move. He paid for everything for the 30 of us all evening. Sometime after midnight, as we danced away, he persuaded me to join everyone in doing a line. My heavens! Beguiled by his charm and euphoric with the riotous fun we were having, I decided to take just a little snort as an educational experiment. I soared. I sailed. Invincible and irresistible is how I felt. At about 3 a.m., it dawned on me I might collapse if I kept on dancing like a banshee, and I declined any more whiffs of his magic powder, educational though it was. Of course he wanted me to go home with him, but I declined. After all, it was only our first date. Dave rescued me, and we returned to his trailer. The next morning, the early news announced one of the biggest drug busts in the Aspen area's history. Holy snorts! My wonderful date was the biggest drug king in Colorado and was off to jail. Dave said, Ma, you can really pick 'em. Well, I guess. So that was one event. My children were very wonderful. They included me in most of their mischief.
Oh, they did. And
they
That was good.
It was good. It was very good.
Well, how did Dom die, Dom Echevarria?
He died in a crash over in Kansas on black ice. And there's a whole chapter in the book about it. It's very complicated, and I don't want to go into it here because it was really, really very complicated and dreadful and awful and all that. He slid on the ice and ran into a bridge abutment and was killed.
Oh, wow.
And the man who was with him was seriously injured, and it may have been a suicide. The police and the insurance companies, both of them, said that it was a suicide and I wouldn't get any money. But I called on that famous guardian angel I have that's so fierce and lies through her teeth, and I managed to get them to pay the insurance money and to say that it was not a suicide. But it may have been, because there were some other things that indicated that possibly was. There was some tragic stuff that was going on. Dom had dipped sheep in South America so long with no access to showers up in the mountain and the Andes Mountains. And we found out just in the last year that if you're overexposed to sheep dip.
And what is sheep dip?
It's, I don't know, what is a horrible brew of stuff that kills all the parasites that sheep have.
Oh.
And he taught the Peruvians how to do that. But we learned that long exposure to that causes a slow deterioration of the brain into insanity. And Dom had begun to display some really frightening symptoms that he might indeed be losing it. And it's possible that he made some great sacrifice and left before that happened to him. Nobody knows. It's a mystery.
Wow.
But it's hard to talk about, hard to think about.
Well, how did you meet Dom?
Oh, I met him at the University of Arizona. I knew his younger brother up in Wickenburg, where I grew up. I knew the family. And his younger brother told me that he had an older brother in the Navy Air Corps who had left to be a pre-med student at the University of Arizona. And I was studying in the library, and I looked up and I saw this glorious, dark, gypsy kind of a guy. The kind girls really have a hard time resisting, some girls. I thought, gosh, he looks so much like Roy. Maybe he's his brother. So I went over and asked him, and he gave me this cold stare, but he said, yes, he was Roy's brother. And since I knew his brother Roy, he'd take me out for a Coke. That was the beginning of a very passionate affair that remained passionate until his death. We were really quite blessed that way.
Well, that's good. How did he take you to all these places that you traveled to, the high Andes of Peru, Colorado, New Mexico, Wyoming?
He just said, we're going. And back in those days, wives married to Basque, you certainly never said, well, I don't want to go. You just packed up and went. And so that's what I did. And it was very, very exciting. I loved it. Growing up the way I did, I loved adventure. And I was kind of brave and kind of stupid, I guess. I actually took 4 children, 5 years old and under, by myself from Phoenix, Arizona to Lima, Peru. To meet Dom. He had gone down ahead of us to find a place for us to live. And he called up and said, come, I've got a place. I got on that plane, and they didn't want to take us. They didn't think we would make it. But I called on that guardian angel, and by golly, they let us on the plane. And my little 5-year-old daughter, Elaine, said, oh, Mother, I was so embarrassed. I thought you were going to sock him in the nose. I said, well, I guess he thought so, too, because he let us on the plane. And we made it. We made it. Oh, my goodness, we had adventures.
How long did you live in Peru?
We were there only about 9 months because Pete, with cystic fibrosis, got very, very sick.
Oh.
And the Peruvian government, quite alarmed, said we don't want his death on our hands. So they sent us home. Dom didn't seem to think that there was much to worry about. He stayed and finished his 2-year contract. We went and home to Arizona and stayed in my parents' guest ranch until he got back.
So you were born in Arizona?
No, I was born in La Jolla, California.
Oh.
It was very hot in Arizona, as you may have heard.
Uh-huh.
And I was born on the 4th of July, which is really a good birthday. Fireworks and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother went down to the beach to see a beached whale. And it smelled so bad, it was so sad, she went into labor and had me in La Jolla.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So you were born in La Jolla, but your family was on vacation there?
No, my dad is too hot in Arizona. My dad had a job managing the Wind and Sea Resort right next to the tennis club, and he managed that for several summers, and that's why they were there. It was wonderful.
Okay.
Oh, it was wonderful.
And then you ended up going to the University of Arizona.
I did. I went to the University of Arizona. Loved it. Country Club of the West back then. I don't know. I think it's better now.
Country Club of the West. How did you become a Wyomingite, Soph?
After Dom was killed, our ranches were in Wyoming, and I was in charge of them. And I thought it would be auspicious, be a wise move to move to Wyoming and take care of those ranches. So I planned to move to Rollins. I like Jackson better.
Okay.
So I moved to Jackson. But anyway.
Where were the other ranches at?
They were all south of Wamsutter. Have you ever heard of Wamsutter?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's full of very ambitious, lively people who are doing good things and making money. Anyway, the ranches are south of Wamsutter and Creston Junction, two of them, the two we still have. The other two that we sold were north of Wamsutter, and one was south of Rollins. And the one we kept at McCarty Canyon is southwest of Rollins, 40 miles southwest of Rollins, over a perfectly dreadful road.
And are any of them working ranches still?
They're all working ranches. They're all working ranches. We ran sheep and cattle on them. The environmentalists came in and prohibited the control of predators. And predators love sheep. There's a bumper sticker that says, eat more lamb. 40,000 coyotes can't be wrong.
40,000 coyotes.
Yes, because they ate all our lambs. It was terrible. So we stopped running sheep and just ran cattle. And after Dom was killed, I ran what we had left of the sheep and the cattle for about 6 months, and it was just too hard for me. I was not doing it well at all. The Basques would not pay any attention to me, no matter how nicely or firmly I issued orders. So I sold all the sheep and fired all the Basques and leased the ranches to a wonderful cattleman from down from Bags, Wyoming. And he's been just great, Stevie Adams. He's taken such good care of us for all these years.
And he's still working for you?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't work for us. He leases from us.
Oh, he does.
Yes.
Okay,
runs himself. Canyon. My sons have kept that, and they buy cattle and feed cattle out there for other people, and I don't know what they do. Luckily, I realize it's none of my business. Oh, how nice. So they take care of McCarty Canyon Ranch, but it usually has cattle on it.
So how do you spend your time now, Soph? What do you like? What are your favorite things to do?
Oh, I love being in beautiful Jackson. And when I go to Wickenburg in the winter, when it gets too cold in Jackson, I love hiking and eating and playing with my many 16 grandkids and my 5 kids who are left. And I love the theater and classical music. I go to the opera down in Phoenix and other places. I even went to the Metropolitan in New York. It was really fun. And I love to write. Writing is such a hobby. When everything else sort of people go off and do their kid thing, I go in and write about it. It's very fun. I love remembering stuff and writing it down. Sometimes it's painful, of course, and sometimes it's hard. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's very fun to do. I also do some sculpting, which I thoroughly enjoy. I keep the clay on the kitchen counter. It's a mess. And between dishes and cooking and stirring the pot, I fiddle in the clay.
That's good.
So that's what I like to do.
Oh. So your 3 books are basically autobiographies about your life.
They're memoirs of the family and me. Since I'm writing it and I'm in the middle of it, I guess it's about me mostly, though I had intended it to be about everybody else equally, but it doesn't seem to work out that way.
Well, I have to read something that you wrote in here, which I thought was really wonderful. The Domingo Echevarria family history is a tall tale, a seething stew of travail, tragedy, and triumph. Any attempt to achieve historical accuracy is doomed, as the story dances through time like something almost mythical and often hard to believe. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I am the one who has been elected to tell it. Cornelia Otis Skinner helpfully offers wisdom. One learns in life to listen and to draw one's own confusions. That was cute. I have listened, drawn mine, and obviously so has most everyone else. Where memory is concerned, one's confusion are so subjective, so varied in what influenced them, that we will sit around discussing an issue, each fervently believing their view is accurate. And after a while, we wonder if we are even talking about the same thing. Does truth where memories are concerned even exist? I submit to you, kind reader, what to me is true. Confusion is inevitable when one is skidding sideways toward a distinguished age, stirring up clouds of dust, as I am, with contributions from my astonishingly confused family. Even amidst all our subjective ambiguities, we rejoice by God. Let us begin.
Thank you.
I love that. That's how you begin it.
I'm glad you do.
Because you're right. Your memory is subjective.
Oh, it's so fluid. I can't believe it. Well, the kids and I talk about some of the events that happened, and we realize that we all have different takes on it. And we have agreed that I should write the funniest, most entertaining one, whether it's true or not. We think it is. We think it's true. So that's what I have been doing.
Are your children contributing stories with you?
Yes. My sons are. The daughters aren't so much. But I ask them things I can't remember, and they fill stuff in. which mm-hmm. is very fun and very interesting. Though at one point, my son Dave told me three wild stories, and I just felt terrible. I thought, I'm losing it. How could I forget those stories? So I said to my son Joseph, I think I'm losing my mind. I can't remember those stories. And he said, Mom, they never happened. So who knows?
So in one of these books, do you have your genealogy outlined at
no,
all?
No, I tried to outline it, and it just got so confusing. I thought, who cares? I'm really not into genealogy that much. My grandmother was. If she were alive, she would have made us a lovely family tree. But there's so many of us. And she very proudly found that we were descended from Peregrine White, who arrived on the Mayflower, and he had 21 children. And it never occurred to my very proper grandmother that there might have been something questionable about that. But she just merrily said, and we're descended from all of them. So I don't know.
So you don't know.
I don't know. No, I don't know. I have mentioned in the first book some of the early relatives who were quite an interesting bunch. To me, they were. And they did some very funny, wild, crazy things. And I've mentioned then, but accuracy is only what my mother and my grandmother told me. And they are as confused as Cornelia Otis Skinner is. So who knows? But they made for good stories.
Well, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I just have two brothers, John and Dana. They're both younger than I am.
Okay. And and Dom, your deceased husband?
He had 10 brothers and sisters. The 12 were born. One died in infancy. So there were 11 children.
Oh, and
huge
where
family.
Are they at? Where, yes,
Most of them are in Arizona. One's in Reno, Nevada. But we left. Dom said, we will not make it in Arizona because the Echeverias look down on me because I'm a dumb blonde who can't cook and doesn't speak Spanish. My family looked down on him because he was a Basque peasant and Catholic. Oh, my God. We thought, better we go to Colorado and not be messed up with the family. It was very, very wise of him. So that's why we left Arizona.
Well, when you said about your genealogy that your families were so huge, it would be hard to trace them.
Oh, impossible, I think. Somebody mm-hmm. who was really into that probably could. But I like the present better. Unless there's some very colorful ancestor, which I have named in my book a few of the really colorful ones. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But the others, so what?
I guess what would be nice, I think, if you wrote down all your children's names and all of their kids and your grandkids' names.
I think that's will be in the third book. The kids are in the second book.
Okay.
I don't think – no grandkids until the third book. There are so many, I don't want it to sound like a school roll call or something. And I don't know quite how to handle that. Any ideas how to put 17 grandkids in? 11 great-grandkids without sounding like a roll call?
Yeah, that would be tough. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a hard question.
It is. But as I write and going to our writers group, it will come to me.
Well, even if you maybe described each of your grandchildren, maybe their personality or, you know, something that makes them special.
I could try to do that. I have done it in the second book for my children. Mm-hmm, somebody mm-hmm. told me, I think it was Tim Sandlin, said, your children are flat. And I said, well, I know them. He said, well, nobody else does.
Right.
So I went back and
That's
rewrote them.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and rewrote them so that they're colorful. And now they are.
And they painted their characters.
Painted their characters, and they are characters, every one of them.
Mm.
And I will do that for some of the grandchildren. There are too many of them, but I will do that for some of them.
Oh, it's been wonderful talking to you. So, Sofia Echeverria, thank you.
Woo, you say it so beautifully.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for asking me.